Okay, so as part of the overall endeavor to look at some of the practicalities of hesychria and some of the specifics, so I thought first we would talk about a whole additional category that may or may not exist and some of its ramifications. And it's certainly one that, if anything, is more practical today than it ever has been. And that's something incredibly relevant, something to think about. And essentially, it's the question of the Gemara talks about Hezek Re'iyah. What about Hezek Shmiyah? Is this something which is specific to being visually spied upon? Or what about one's words being overheard by others? The fact that people can hear you. Maybe they can't see you, but they can hear you. So how does that fit in, both logically and textually, with the idea of Hezek Re'iyah and its implications? Hi.
I know that we're preceding the sources. I think just going back to our models of Hezek Re'iyah for a second,
Okay.
I think it would fit in very clearly with maybe our emotional model of
Okay, so if
Hezek
you want to
Re'iyah.
address, like, let's first ask the question. So what Zach wants to address is, just if someone had to ask you before seeing any sources, so what would you think? So everything we've said about Hezek Re'iyah, how would that apply to a concept, a parallel concept in the realm of Shmi? Okay, so Zach, yeah, take it away.
So I think it would exist in maybe our Hezek Re'iyah being an emotional consideration that, it's unfair to sort of subject people to having everything heard, but perhaps maybe on a legalistic level, we might say you might not have a legal right, or there might not be a legal ramification of, we are enforcing this conception of Hezek Shmiyah upon you.
So why would you come to that conclusion, especially if you hadn't seen any sources, which is how we just phrased it? So working off that premise, if you're answering logically, why would you come to that conclusion?
Because I think the idea of, like, Hezek Shmiyah is sort of coming from the same place, at least on the emotional angle. I don't want to be seen. I don't want to be heard. I want my privacy.
Okay, so that's the first part of it. For the second part, you say that it wouldn't be legally enforced. Some Hezek Shmiyah going on.
Well, that's the question. Because I think that, I mean, this is more coming from the sources. Like, this is maybe I'm cheating a little bit.
Well, not cheating, but then let's shift to that then for a second. As you're saying, so logically, you wouldn't necessarily
As in, I can say that that's an emotional consideration, but, there is no discussion in the Gemara, Hezek Shmiyah, Shmei Hezek, or not,
Okay.
as far as I know, so.
Okay, but you're assuming from at least as far as the Bavli is concerned, there's no
Yeah, there's nothing.
there's nothing about Hezek Shmiyah. So what did you see in the sources? Who talks about this? All right, so at least two of the earlier sources that talk about it more explicitly, which I gave you to see this morning. All right, first, what was first on the list? The Meiri. So what does the Meiri say about Hezek Shmiyah, right? He addresses it directly. He uses that phrase, and what does he say about it? So the Meiri comes to it from the context of our Mishnah. It's on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, and he's trying to explain that the minig can determine what kind of wall would suffice to prevent Hezek Re'iyah, and that essentially, in order to prevent Hezek Re'iyah, so all we need is to stop there from being a line of sight. So if you're successful in preventing a line of sight, so then that would suffice. So whatever minig there is, whatever the thickness of the wall, as long as it does that, it's an acceptable minig. So the implicit question is, well, really? But some walls are much better than others at preventing sound from traveling. So what about that? So to that, he says, that we're not worried about. Our focus here is on preventing line of sight. And when it comes to being overheard, so why is he not worried about that? How does he explain it?
Because people are generally careful anyway.
People are generally careful.
Right,
well, he's coming off the Mishnah, so coming off that case, so then presumably, yeah, let's say it's, that's the premise. Now, how it would apply to other situations, we can see, but that's what it sounds like. So, that's the jumping board. So, here you have one statement about this, that essentially, we're not worried about Hezek Shmir. Now, the Re'eim also addresses this concept in his Chuvus. The Re'eim was Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, known for, among other things, wrote a commentary on Rashi, which is often cited, and many other things. So, Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, in his Chuvus in Siman Ches, so he invokes Zach's point from before, that Hezek Shmia, if you do a quick survey in your mind of Bavli and Yerushalmi, you don't find too many references to Hezek Shmia as a consideration. So, one question to ask, first of all, they're both essentially saying that Hezek Shmia is not a factor here. Our Gemaras are talking about Hezek Re'ia, not Hezek Shmia. Are they saying it for the same reason? Are they disagreeing with each other? So there are those who read them as being somewhat at odds with each other. I don't know, I don't think it really comes out that way once you work it through totally. But that the initial basis for some kind of disagreement here is that the Re'eim is saying just Hezek Shmi is not a thing because the Gemara doesn't talk about it. While the Meiri, it sounds like he's saying Hezek Shmia could have been a thing, but people deal with it. So, is that a significant disagreement? I'm not really sure it's going to translate to a disagreement at all. But, okay, on the surface, one could say that that presents somewhat of a different formulation. Now, is it really a disagreement? What essentially are they both saying?
I'm just saying the reason, and one's saying that's why they didn't make it
all up. It could be, right? In which case, they're not really disagreeing at all. I mean, they're saying that Chazal didn't talk about it, maybe because for the reason that the Meiri is saying. Now, part of what the Meiri is telling us, I guess, is that there's just a physical difference between seeing and hearing, that we can exert more control over our volume than we can over our visibility. Right, that essentially when it comes to being visible, so if we don't want people to see us doing private things, so we basically only have one option, which is not to do the private things in those places. If we can't create any more of a divider. While when it comes to speech, you have a little more control because you can lower your volume. You can do other techniques to not have yourself be overheard. So you can exert a little bit more control over the circumstances when it comes to speech than when it comes to being seen. So it sounds like that's what the Meiri is focusing on when he says that we don't have to worry about Hezek Shmi at all as far as what the Mishnah is talking about. That people have much more control over. Now, especially when we've seen that a factor in the Hezek Re'ia issue is people having some awareness of when they're being seen by others and calibrating their behavior accordingly. So here, if it's more possible, it's more within your hands to calibrate what you're doing, so then we could understand why there would be less of an issue or maybe a non-issue when it comes to Hezek Shmia. Hi.
Do we say that maybe the Meiri, I mean, this is maybe a little jumping ahead in the Gemara, we say maybe the Meiri is getting that concept from maybe our Daf forward, where, you know, with the story with Baba Ben Buta and Harriet, where he's like, you know, who knows who's going to hear, so, you know, sort of we're establishing that as a not just a concept in, you know, Koheles, but as a concept in the Gemara in general. So therefore, obviously, universally, people have to be careful.
It's interesting, you know, it's interesting finding that broader theme and connection with what the Gemaras are putting next to each other. So it's definitely something to think about. You know, that's a part of what the message that's emerging from what's here. So it's definitely an interesting thought. You know, the expression "the walls have ears." Where does that come from? Rashi quotes it in the Sechus Brachos. It was Naim Lakoso. You have to be aware that there could be people listening that you can't see. So we're trained to be careful about that, or we should be careful about that. So therefore, maybe that creates a different reality. Now, especially also, like we were saying, that if the central question in Hezek, Riyah, Shmei Hezek, or Lav Shmei Hezek, if we all agree that there is a negative impact in how people are affected by not having privacy, so then the question of Shmei Hezek or Lav Shmei Hezek, we formulated at one point, it's all basically about, yes, that's a problem according to everyone. The question is, whose responsibility is it? So then, it's easy to understand within what the Meiri said, that Hezek Riyah Shmei Hezek, meaning it's your problem, Hezek Shmiah Lav Shmei Hezek, meaning it's his problem, because he should control his voice. He should make sure not to be overheard. So what's important to appreciate, especially according to the way the Meiri says it, and presumably this is what the aim means also, is that not to say that it's completely nothing, but to say that essentially it just plays out differently. So to give you one modern discussion of this, so there is a essay in the Sefer Emek HaMishpat, which is a collection of thick volumes written by Rabbi Phillips on many issues in Chosh HaMishpat, and he has one thick volume on Nizkei Shcheinim and related things, and he has essentially a tshuva there. It says about two neighbors, and one wants to build a balcony onto his house, and it's going to be an addition into their shared space. And what's going to happen is that once he's building on this balcony, so it's basically going to be right up against his neighbor's kitchen. And he's not going to be able to see in the kitchen because there's not going to be a window facing that direction. So it's not specifically a Hezek Re'iyah question. But the neighbor is complaining that it is going to be a Hezek Shmiah situation. He's saying that he's going to be in his kitchen and this guy is going to be in his balcony, which is now right up against his kitchen wall. He's going to be able to hear everything. So Shimon, say the neighbor, objects to Reuven. He says he doesn't think he should be allowed to build this balcony up against his kitchen wall. So what would you decide? Who do you think is right here? Yeah, Shimon?
I mean, even though we said before that, like, you could lower your voice, it would seem like back to like when we were talking about like Hezek Re'iyah, like potentially causing you like to like lose out financially, and that you're using your property the wrong, like not the wrong way, but differently than normal.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem like you're like forcing the person to like not use the kitchen as a kitchen would normally be used. That might be problematic.
Okay, so it seems like essentially what you're saying is that component of Hezek Re'iyah, the logic, we say zilbas or taima, if you go to the reason of why it exists, sounds like that applies here also. Your own?
Yeah, you say maybe there's a filler between like whether you're inside or outside, like in like inside your own home, like you're allowed to speak, but if someone's going to infringe upon like the way you just normally speak in your house, not even if you're raising your voice, like that's kind of, you know, like infringing upon your own like daladamos in a sense. Like,
it's too much.
Yeah.
Too much, right? So try to go there. I think was Al done yesterday, then Zach.
Yeah, even according to the Hezek Yalashmei Hezek side,
mm-hmm.
Hezek in a bayit is very different. Looking through a window is a different level. So even if we say in general, Hezek Shmiah is not, it's a, in your house, the assumption is that you're not being listened to.
Okay, these are all interesting points. That's
just because it doesn't say it anymore, so why would you say it's a buff?
Okay, so you're saying we don't want it to do a zeal buster time. Let's just go to the sources. And essentially, which may, we don't know if that's what he means, but that might be the Rain's point, you know, that we only have what we have. And if it doesn't say it, then how do we know? Okay, Zach?
My point got stolen.
Okay, that's pretty intense. Okay, so essentially, so I guess we have a little bit of a mixed vote here. So the Emek HaMishpat essentially says that he thinks the halach is with Shimon. That the objection that Shimon has that you should not be able to build, he thinks is a valid objection. And it goes essentially to the way Zach formulated things before we started. He said, what would you thought before there was a source? And before we saw Meiri or their aim, so what would you have thought? So it's similar to what Shmuel said afterwards. And that if we go to the reasons, so that's, we have to break this down into two phases. That first of all, if we look at the reasons that we have, the issues that the Rishonim highlight in Hezekiah, A, the personal intrusion, the idea that somebody suffers from not having any privacy. So that would seem to be true if they feel like they can't have a conversation without being overheard. But also, the Manias Hishtamshus issue is there as well. It's certainly the idea that they're going to feel like they're losing the value of their house and possibly not being able to carry out business is very significant as well. Right? Especially, let's say, in the modern world, if you say, what's more inhibiting to you in your attempts to do business without worrying about corporate espionage or about competition getting an edge over you? So would you say people being able to see you or people being able to hear you? I think they'd probably be more worried about people being able to hear all of your conversations. So logically, all of these sources, all of these issues seem to apply to a Shmia situation as well. Hi.
As long as we're mentioning the issue of modern issues, mm-hmm. Well, really the issue now might not be hearing or seeing, it would be reading.
Yes.
And so this is the question is that Hezekiah or is that Hezek Shmia?
So, right, or both. Right, so let's try to develop that a little bit more. So, but first, just as far as this is concerned, so step one of the issue is establishing that these problems seem to play out the same way, if not more so, in a Shmia situation like this, specifically. So then we still have the technical question, okay, but why does the Gemara not talk about it? Why is that not addressed? And what about the Meiri's point that even a thin wall that prevents you from seeing but allows you to hear is still sufficient for the din of the Mishnah? So what about that point? So I think this is something that Yaron was addressing and that Al was addressing, that essentially Yesh Gvul, that you know, there are limits, that what the Meiri was saying or what he was addressing was that in a normal circumstance that it makes sense to say that people can calibrate. But when you're literally going to have no space in your house to talk, you can't even talk in your own kitchen because this guy is literally up against your wall. So then that certainly seems to be a out of the ordinary kind of situation, which we wouldn't have expected the Mishnah to address when it's addressing more normal kind of situations. He also emphasized in this case that this is no longer about somebody just building in his own property. Like when a person has a window on his property. So we're discussing in the context of Hezekiah what is a problem for me for him to do on his property. But here, this is essentially the shared space in between the two houses. Right? It's not really any property of one more than it is of the other. And to use that shared space to create this listening zone where you're going to be right up against the other guy's kitchen, he thought that that certainly should define itself differently, and all of the issues that come along with general Hezek Ria should apply here as well. Now, just to flesh that out a little bit more, but to come from a different direction and then come back here, so what about we're always been discussing so far, both in the Hezek Re'iyah and in the Hezek Shmiya default situations, or the Mishnah situation of Hezek Re'iyah, we're basically talking about not that you're trying to spy, but creating situations where you inevitably or too easily will come to be exposed to your neighbor's doings. So the Hezek Re'iyah situations, we start off talking about just construction issues, that you shouldn't be in a position where it's too easy to see what your neighbor is doing. And then we discussed beyond that, somebody who is actively looking at what they're doing. So to parallel, when we talk about Hezek Shmi and we talk about this situation also, we're talking about where you're building your own context in a way that it's too easy to overhear what the other guy is saying. But what about somebody who would intentionally try to overhear what other people are talking about? And especially Bizman Hazeh, where technology has made that easier than ever. It's made it easier than ever to do. And even easier than that, to do undetected. And so if you could overhear, and you could intentionally choose to overhear what other people are saying, so is that okay? So everyone who discusses this assumes that it's not okay. But an interesting discussion to have is, what exactly is the reason why it's not okay? So here, one source, if you got to see the Shulte Gibarim was just one reference to a reality that is well known from a number of later sources. And this is one of the Cherims to Rabbeinu Gershom. Rabbeinu Gershom made a number of Charamim, bans, enactments, how exactly you want to translate it, is a little bit of a question, because it's going to make a difference, but we don't just call it a cherem. He made certain policies, so they come up in a number of areas of halacha, including that one should not divorce his wife against her will, and one should not marry more than one wife. So, in addition to that, he also had a cherem against somebody who would read someone else's mail. So the Shulte Gibarim and Shavuos, if you had a chance to see it, he was talking about the impact of the Cherem, etc. But there are those who argue that here, this Cherem is clearly there to prevent some degree of spying on others, of nosing into other people's business. So it makes a lot of sense to assume that Zach was asking the question before about reading other people's things, but here, let's go in the other direction. So he first talked about reading other people's letters, so presumably if he said there's a cherem against that, so trying to listen in on other people's conversations should presumably be included in that. So there are a number of contemporary authors and authors in recent centuries who made that point, to associate intentional eavesdropping with the Cherem der Rabbeinu Gershom. And there are others who disagreed. And there are others who said that, not that they think it's okay to do this, quite the opposite, but they thought that it's also for other reasons, and that it really goes back to the Torah itself. So why would it be an Isser D'Oraisa? So they formulated at least three ways. Each one requires a little bit of explanation. But the first, and probably sufficient and most basic, is that it's a violation of Ve'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. And that we spoke about a little bit when we talked about Hezek Re'iyah, so we don't need to spend so much time explaining that. But you'll recall that we said V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha is a mitzvah min ha-Torah, a very well-known mitzvah min ha-Torah, it's more than just a mitzvah. Sefer Achinuch calls it a klal gadol b'Torah. I mean, the Medrash calls it a klal gadol b'Torah, but the Sefer Achinuch explains that idea of it being a klal gadol b'Torah. The Kiva statement is klal gadol b'Torah. Sefer Achinuch explains that the reason it's called klal gadol, I mean, it's not just a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah, but it is a mitzvah that is also a principle that you can derive many other things from. So you can figure out that certain behaviors either fit or don't fit. And as we discussed, that the negative formulation of Hillel, Megillah and Shabbos, Mazalach, Sani, L'chevrecha, L'osavi, is preferred by many because it's more manageable. That don't do to others, we don't want done to you. So presumably none of us want to be spied on, want to have our phones tapped, our computers hacked. So therefore, you can understand that you shouldn't do it to someone else. So that really could suffice, but there are other reasons that are invoked as well. So among them, so there is the issue of Gnevas Das is invoked. Now Gnevas Das is a little bit more complicated to bring in here, just to mention that for a minute or two. So first of all, it's interesting, if you're to translate Gnevas Das literally, so it does sound exactly like that. If you've never heard the phrase Gnevas Das before, but you speak Hebrew, and I ask you, what does Gnevas Das mean? So you might say it means espionage or intellectual property theft, right? It sounds like you are stealing information. So probably the best literal translation of Gnevas Das could be something like this, you know, basically stealing facts, stealing things that you're stealing someone's answer when you raise your hand before you, but stealing somebody's information and their facts by listening. Sounds like a pretty good translation of the term. Problem is, it's not the language that Chazal use. I mean, at least in the Gemara in Chulin, where the sugya of Gnevas Das appears, we got to learn that 2 years ago, for those who were here. So there, the Gemara means that you are stealing somebody's opinion. That's the most formal halachic definition of Gnevas Das. How do you steal someone's opinion? It means you get it under false pretenses. You pretend to be doing somebody a favor when you really aren't, so then they'll be grateful to you, they'll think you're very hospitable, think you're very nice. So if you act in a way that gets yourself a good reputation under false pretenses, so that's the traditional halachic application of Gnevas Das, meaning you are stealing their opinion. Das is their opinion in a sense. The idea of Das is information. So, like I said, it's a good literal translation. And it is one that appears in later literature. So in some of the literature about intellectual property and about things like that, so you do find that phrase used. You have to trace then exactly what the source is. In general, the Isser of Gnevas Das, the Gemara talks about. So it's a good question what the source is. Most assume it's an Issa D'Raisa. There is a view in Rishonim that it's an Issa D'Rabbana. Most assume that it's an Issa D'Raisa. So some understand it to be correlated to Sheker, because it's about deception. Some understand it to be correlated to Gneva, as the phrase sounds, because you are taking something of value, even if it's not tangible. So maybe that allows this to fit. You have to figure out when they say it's Asur Darais and Mishum Gnevas Das, we don't know what the source for Gnevas Das is, a couple of candidates. So you have to see, especially if it's being used in a different sense, you have to fill in the blanks there a little bit of how exactly you trace that back to the Chumash. But that's another statement that you have there. And the other possibility that is invoked in a number of sources in different ways is the idea of Lashon Hara. So how is Lashon Hara fit here? So there are a couple of different ways to explain it. You can find it in some older Svarim, you can find it in some later Svarim. That how does Lashon Hara fit in this context? So one usage, one way to explain it, is to go back to maybe one of the older sources that have this, the Tshuvas of Rabbi Yaakov Chagiz, number of Shalos and Shuvis, Halachos Ketanos, essentially phrases it this way, that if the Torah says, Lo Selech Rachel Bi'Amecha, you should not travel around as a talebearer. So he has the phrase there, Mali rochel acherim, mali rochel atzmo. Like, why should we care? Why should the victim care if you are selling his story, so to speak, peddling his story to someone else, or you're peddling it to yourself? Right? If you know sensitive information, let's use that word for now, you know sensitive information about somebody that you are giving to a third party in a way that is going to make them unhappy, so they're going to be just as unhappy if you are accessing that information for yourself, if you are essentially telling yourself that information by spying on them. So the essence of Lashon Hara is being violated the same way. Or to formulate it slightly differently, the way some more recent Sfarim put it, that normally there are three parties in the Aveira of Lashon Hara. Right? There is the subject, and there is the speaker and the listener. So how do you know that one person can't play two roles? He can be the speaker and the listener, that he can find out, dig up the information himself by reading your emails or by tapping your phone or whatever, and telling that information to himself. So shouldn't that also be an equal violation of Lashon Hara just because you're playing two roles? Who says he can't play two roles? Who says that that's not possible? And that may indeed be a violation of Lashon Hara. Had a question about that? Okay. So that's how some formulate it. People point that also in terms of, in general, violating people's privacy and Lashon Hara. It's a longer discussion. But the Rambam, when he formulates the Isser of Lashon Hara in Hilchos Deis, so he formulates it as you convey information that causes pain, to cause a problem for the person you're talking about. So sometimes it's because you're going to get them fired or you're going to get them in trouble somehow. Or sometimes it's because they are embarrassed by the fact that you're talking about it. So the revelation of private material could just as well fit into the standard definition of Lashon Hara. It doesn't have to be negative per se, because the fact that it's private causes distress to the subject. So just like saying bad things about them causes them problems, so too private things, even if there's nothing inherently negative, but it causes distress also, so therefore it fits within the prohibition of Lashon Hara. And again, you can play both roles. So that's a notion that you find in a number of, go back to Shuvasov's Kitanis and more recent formulations, that there is a violation of Lashon Hara here. And one contemporary sefer, the Tshuva Svidarashta Chakarta, who is also the one who, for example, you can find contemporary Svarim who argue Cherem Derbeinu Gershon is relevant here, and you have others who say, no, you don't even need Cherem Derbeinu Gershon, go back to just the concepts of Minat Torah, and you will find this idea for these reasons. So among them, the Tshuva Svidarashta Chakarta is one of those making that point. And he notes, he says, that this really goes back to our sugya and the Ramban. Right? So if you recall, the Ramban writes in Chazkas Habatim that we saw on Nintes, the Ramban wrote that among the issues of Hezekiah was Lashna Bisha, was Lashon Hara. So we posed the question at the time, you know, why is it Lashon Hara? Because you have Hezekiah. So why does that lead to Lashon Hara? So we discussed at the time that just the idea of everyone being in everyone else's noses, so that everyone's noses in everyone else's business, I guess that's more accurate what you're saying, so that's already going to constitute the spirit of Lashon Hara. So I suggest you could say it more literally, that in the spirit of what we just said the past few minutes, that Lashon Hara you can speak to yourself too by finding out information that shouldn't be available to you and getting it illegitimately. So if you're spying on someone else, you could say that is an Isser of Lashon Hara. And to prove his point, he points to the Yerushalmi in Peah, which was on this morning's sources if you had a chance to see. In general, we don't have any Masechta Lashon Hara. So this is a part of what leads some people, to say it generously, is a part of what leads some people to think that Lashon Hara is not really a serious thing, or it's not really a halachic thing, because we don't have any masechta about it. We also not brought Shulchan Aruch, different discussion, but the idea that we don't have masechta about it means some people think, okay, it's not such a big deal. Okay, spoiler alert, it's a huge deal. But also, we have a lot of sugyas. You know, people think the Chafetz Chaim invented the whole idea of Lashon Hara as a halachic concept, that it was just a mystery idea. But we have a lot of sugyas and shas, which treat Lashon Hara very halachically. And they're mostly scattered, but there are some concentrations. So in the Bavli, in the middle of Maseches Erchin, you have a concentration of Gemaras about Lashon Hara. You have major sugyas elsewhere in Shas too, in Maseches Shabbos, in Maseches Nida, and various other halachics, so there are statements against Lashon Hara throughout all the Shas. But really, clearly halachic sugyas appear in such places. So in the Bavli, it's concentrated a little bit in Erchin. And in the Yerushalmi, in the beginning of Peah, you have a lot of statements about Lashon Hara. So one of the statements, which I put on the list this morning, is that the Yerushalmi in Peah says that there is a, that included in the Isser of Lashon Hara is Hayodol, right? Which would literally translate to one who knows it. Right? So what does that mean, one who knows it? So he assumes that maybe it means that one who seeks to find something out that he shouldn't be knowing about, who actively pursues information that's not supposed to otherwise be available to him, is in violation of Lashon Hara as well. He notes that the Pnei Moshe over there translates it differently, and basically says it's Merames, that's how he understands that word. But if you translate it literally, it sounds like it means that just the act of knowing something, now knowing something could be passive. So since it could be passive, so presumably what the Gemara is telling you is that when it's not passive, when you are seeking out information that is not otherwise something you're entitled to, that would be a violation of the prohibition of Lashon Hara as well.
I would argue even under the Pnei Moshe's conception of Merames, it would still be a point of, like, I know secret information. It's like,
yeah, but I think his point is that then it means it's a way of conveying it. More traditionally, when we're traditionally understand Lashon Hara, that you're conveying negative information to a third party. So in the Pnei Moshe's interpretation, it's not so different. It's about how you're conveying it. But he wants to say a little differently, is that it's not just about that, but it's also about the fact that even just without another speaker, you yourself, by finding something out, could be in violation of Lashon Hara in that sense. So, you know, these are all ways to explain how Lashon Hara itself could be a source, together with Gnevus Das, however we trace that, and V'Hav Lerech Kamocha, which again by itself could be a very effective catch-all, but could certainly do the job, as sources for the Isser D'Oraisa of eavesdropping. And you wouldn't necessarily have to come on to the Cheirim D'Rabbeinu Gershom in order to address it. Yes, sir.
Does it not seem unlikely that it wouldn't be mentioned anywhere in Shas if that were included in Lashon Hara?
I don't know. Because, you know, if you could apply it logically.
Common.
Sorry?
It's pretty common.
Yeah, but if you could understand it logically, the Havtel Yerach HaKamocha itself, you know, could just cover it without.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but also, I'm saying that the fact that it should be in the
just
detail of Lashon Hara, but these arguments are all saying that it is included within the mechanics of Lashon Hara, logically. Like, so for example, the way the Halachas Ketana says it, that Mali Rochel Atzmo, Mali Rochel Acher, Mali Rochel Atzmo, essentially the mechanics are the same. Whoever said that you can't play two roles? You know, whoever said that you can't be both the disseminator and the recipient? You'd be the one doing it to yourself. Right?
Also, just to respond for a second, it also could be that knowing the secret information in the first place is, you know, something that we sort of like presuppose in Lashon Hara. So maybe it's not the literal Isser itself, but it's, you know, if I don't know any information about anybody, I can't really say Lashon Hara. So it's sort of like, I guess, the prelude to the Isser.
But
like
not necessarily. It could both be separate parts, because in general, any privacy violation is something you find in law also. You know, a violation of invasion of someone's privacy, you could have any part without the other. So I could access private information and not share it with anyone. Or I could share private information that I know legitimately. You know, there could be something that was told to me under legitimate circumstances, but that I'm obligated to keep private, and I violated that. So you have two halves of the equation. You could do any half or do both. So it doesn't necessarily presuppose that you learned something illegitimately, but if you did learn it illegitimately, then you could be both the spreader and the recipient, by telling yourself. So a few more points to make about this. We'll see how much we can squeeze in the time we have. So first of all, as far as the whole discussion of, okay, so this doesn't need Chemder Ben Gershom, it's ready in us, it's ready in Nisim and HaTorah and the like, that prompts a major question, which is a big discussion, let's see, just to touch upon it for a few minutes, about what is the implication of something being a Chemder, whether it's a Chemder or a Ben Gershom, or a general Chemder Makmonim, or a Chemder Gaonim. We have a few places in Halacha, something that is associated with the subject of a Chemder. So what does it mean to be a Chemder? What are the implications? So there are those who maintain that shows you that essentially this was not previously usher, that it was something that whether Rabbeinu Gershom or some other major rabbinic leader had to impose, because until they came along, it wasn't prohibited. While there are others who maintain, so for example, the way Rav Schechter often explains it, is that it doesn't mean that it was mutter beforehand. It means that it's a curse, basically, that this is something that people were mezalzel in, people were doing. So the rabbinic leadership made a big ban on people doing it because they were doing it, but not because it was okay until they made the ban. It was something that they had to get involved in and make a kolkari about and express their extreme displeasure and associate a public curse with it. But it doesn't mean that they invented it. It doesn't mean that before they came along, it was permitted. So, for example, this is to divorce your wife against her will. It works in our Torah, but it was never right. It was never permissible. And therefore, Rabbeinu Gershom, as we've just explained, Rabbeinu Gershom came and made a big public statement about how you shouldn't do it. But it's not that it was okay beforehand, and as he would say in the same breath, you know, to read someone's mail would always be wrong. It's not that he invented that. It was totally fine before that. It was itself wrong, but he came and made a public statement about how it shouldn't happen anymore. Now, there's a lot more to discuss about that. So, for example, where does the issue of marrying two wives come into play, which is a fascinating subject, probably for a different time. Maybe we, did we speak about this year? I mean, a few days there? I don't know. Maybe we did a little bit, but it's a fascinating subject in and of itself, but worthy of much longer discussion. But in general, that's a broad question. You give an example of where else it comes up in Hilchos Lashon Hara, for example. So there is a, this is, I guess, a good Sefer Bereishis topic, because it comes up a lot, Sefer Bereishis. So there is a question of Lashon Hara on people who are no longer alive. So that's something where the Ramah brings a Cherem HaKadmonim, not to be Motzi Shemer, that's to learn to be Motzi Shemer on the Mason. So what does that mean? So the Vilyashiv understands in his Kedushim to Brachos, that Aros to Brachos, the Sefer's fault, that there's an Issur D'oraisa to speak Lashon Hara about somebody who is deceased as well, just the same as somebody who's alive. And Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says differently in his commentary to Chumash. So in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, it's a Bereishis topic, he says, how could the Torah say all these unfavorable stories about the Shvatim? And he writes there that the main reason is because it's necessary for our education and our chinuch. But in the context that he says, and they're not alive anymore, so there's no actual issue of Lashon Hara. So he's assuming that the, well, there's a lot to fill in, but that's really the assumption, but it's not like he's saying that the Cherem is a new policy that was created later. So there's a machlokus in general how to relate to this concept of a Cherem. But especially if one does take the view that a cherem is something that always was aser. So we could also just develop that a little further and say that, especially within that, it actually works best for things davka like this. And it goes to Yossi's point before about what's explicit, what's not explicit, that maybe the perfect candidate for a cherem is something which really is wrong on a deraisa level, something which does contradict Torah principles, but it's not spelled out. So one can be very hetter to himself and say, well, show me where in the Torah it says I can't read your mail. Tell me where in the Torah does it say that I can't tap your phone. So he'll say that, well, what do you mean? You have to learn kamocha, which the truth is that should be enough. That if you apply it honestly, I think you come to the conclusion that should be enough. But someone could still say, eh, I don't see that. Come on, no, it's a big deal. That's not a violation of the Ahasuerus and Kamocha. So you think it makes sense to say that the perfect candidate for something to be a cherem is exactly that kind of thing. Something, it's not Chilul Shabbos to reading treif. You know, it's something which is neither that nor mutter, meaning that it was always problematic, but problematic in a less explicit way. And one could be more hetter and tell himself, it's not such a big deal. So davka that is where a cherem makes the most sense. So this, even though it's phrased as a back and forth and a machlokus in some of the contemporary svarim, doesn't necessarily have to be a machlokus. They're all on the same page. But essentially, yes, it is included within the cherem of Rabbeinu Geshem on reading people's mail. And that cherem itself was enacted because it was always Torah values that were being contradicted by this kind of behavior. So they're both true. It's against these values, Minat Torah, and it is also covered by the cherem of Rabbeinu Geshem. So we're going to run out of time, so I'm just going to say first that one major point to understand, to plug it back into our Gemara, so the past few minutes we've been talking about intentional eavesdropping. Right, so that, everyone agrees, intentional eavesdropping has these issues, has all of these issues. So it's going to be a violation of, Behaftar Echakamocha, and Yevus Das, and Lashon Hara, and Cherem Biru Negeshet. Everyone agrees that intentionally seeking to overhear conversations that you are not meant to hear would violate, to some degree, all of these principles. And in terms of reconciling, let's say, the tshuva we started off with, the Emek HaMishpat, with the fact that where he was saying that Shimon has a taina, you cannot build this way, and yet the Re'eim and the Meiri both said Hezek Shemina is not a problem in building. So there, he's not talking about intentional eavesdropping. He's talking about what our Mishnah started off with, just about a construction issue, which doesn't necessarily presume intentional espionage. However, he was arguing that still there is a degree that you can reach a point where even without intentional eavesdropping, just your basic construction is going to cause a problem. So as he himself points out, this works well, especially with the Ramban in the third parak. Ramban Chazak Sabatim, who says Lashon Hara is a reason just to have a general peda about how you construct your houses and Hezek Re'iyah. So too, that if that's the case, so then even without intentional efforts to overhear somebody, but construction that's going to be extreme in creating these issues will violate Lashon Hara the same way Hezek Re'iyah and the Ramban's understanding also violates Lashon Hara. So that takes us pretty far. Now, Rav Zilberstein has two different statements about recording somebody else's conversations, which have a nuanced difference. So we're out of time for today, so that's the Shem. We'll start with that tomorrow and compare and contrast them. I think we'll find a few other interesting details. Just very quickly, so is there a thing about Hezek Shmia? So according to Meiri, we don't worry about that in construction because people are able to manage themselves. According to their aim, we don't find it in Shas. But as we said, that's by default, but there could be extreme circumstances where we would worry about it. That's the point of the Emek HaMishpat. And intentional eavesdropping, for sure, would seem to be us, according to everybody, whether it's because of Cheir Rabbeinu Gershom or because of Vahatarech Kamocha Loshon Hara Gnei Bezdas. And we know it doesn't have to be a machlokas, that the Cheirim itself could just be a recognition that all these points are there, and that's enough reason also for even not intentionally strapping, but extreme hyperextremia kind of construction issues to be included. So a little bit more to say about that. We'll pick up it tomorrow. Everyone should have a wonderful day. Should be only good things. And we'll see you soon.